Welcome to the Cool Tools Show. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, Editor-in-Chief of Cool Tools, a website of tool recommendations written by our readers. You can find us at cool-tools.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Kelly, founder of Cool Tools. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here.
In each episode of the Cool Tools Show, Kevin and I talk to a guest about some of his or her favorite uncommon and uncommonly good tools they think others should know about. Our guest this week is David Moldauer. David is a Brooklyn-based writer and book collaborator who spent more than a decade as an acquiring editor in New York City publishing. David also happens to have edited a couple of my previous books, so it's really great reconnecting. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm good, Mark. It's so nice to be chatting with you again. It's been a little while.
It is. It really is.
And it's really great to meet you, David, because I am in high regard of anybody who edits books. It's a high calling, and thank you for what you do.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I had a great time working at publishers, and now I'm out here in the world working directly with authors. But I'm a big fan of Cool Tools, so I'm just really tickled to be on the show.
Well, great.
And Dave, one of the books that we worked on together, I think it was Rule the Web, right?
That's right.
Which was like my book of like tips for kind of using the internet in the early 2000s. And you ended up being like a tremendous resource of really interesting sites and services, online services that I'd never heard of that made their way into the book. And so I've always kind of been astounded by the cool things that you find and how really useful they are. I don't know how you do it, but you have some to talk about today.
I do. So,
yeah.
I do it by reading sites like Boing Boing and Cool Tools and staying on top of it. That's how I do it.
That's great. Yeah. You're just a pioneer in so many things. We were talking earlier that you had a podcast called Moldauer in the Morning that you were doing way, way back in the early days of podcasting. So you're kind of a pioneer in a lot of this stuff.
I love to play with new tools, and I've brought you four, and I hope they're new to you guys because they're relatively new to me, but they've all had a huge impact on how I work.
Cool. Well, let's start with this first one called FocusMate.
And now I'm regretting that I didn't include like a cool hammer or scissors or something because it's all digital, and I wish okay. I was more handsy. We did a book called Made by Hand. I wish I had something appropriate.
That's okay.
Okay. So, FocusMate, this has been transformative for me over the last few months, and the other users of it that I talk to, we all have the same. It's when you discover that new exciting product and everyone's like, boy, how did more people not know about this? So FocusMate is very simple. It pairs you with a random person via webcam and you work together for 50 minutes at a time.
Wait. You're paired with a random, but you're not working on the same project. You're just like working next to each other?
Exactly. So it's like having a virtual co-working partner. So what happens is you have a calendar and you pick a slot. So let's say I want to work at 9 a.m. And I just say, I want to work at 9. And then it kind of goes in the background and eventually pairs me with someone. It'll say, oh, you're working with John or Bill or Melinda at 9 a.m. And at that time, I click start. And it brings up a typical webcam, you know, video chat kind of window. And the other person's there sitting at a desk. And I'll say, hi, what are you working on? They'll say, oh, I'm grading something because I'm a teacher. And I'll say, okay, great. I'm doing some editing because I'm a book collaborator. And that's it. And then we'll just sit there and work with the webcam going. And the thing is, nobody really watches each other. They close, you know, they move to another tab. They go to whatever they're working on. But at the end of the session, a little chime goes off and you go back to the window and you say, how did it go? And they say, oh, well, you know, I got distracted. I got a phone call, whatever. But the thing is, something about that psychological awareness that someone else is also working at the same time keeps me pinned to my work and in a state of flow like nothing else I've ever done. And I've heard that over and over from other people. They are able to work for 15 minutes solid, more than a Pomodoro, two Pomodoros in a row, without even thinking of a break usually. And some people will do it the whole day. I usually do just two or three sessions a day, but some people will book their whole day and do everything. And they just switched to a thing where you can pay for it. They're finally adding a $5 a month pro plan, but it's the biggest bargain. Like I signed up immediately when they emailed me about it because it powers my entire practice.
So this would obviously for a lot of people who actually have coworkers or working in some kind of a an office, then this would not necessarily be necessary. This is mostly for people who are working by themselves or freelancers working at home.
Yes. And here's the thing. I actually had a co-working space, a really nice one in the neighborhood, quiet, oriented towards writers. I was a big fan of it, but I still wasn't really dialed in. I'd go into the coffee area. I'd kind of get, you know, distracted, and having the other people around working on their own projects, I didn't know what they were up to, and they were working for various businesses. There was no connection. There wasn't any sense that we were sitting down to work at this time, at this place. And I found this, and of course, it's hard to do when you're in a place where you're not supposed to talk. So I stayed home and I tried it, and I was so much more effective with this that I just canceled my membership at the co-working space, because I can just sit at home and I can just work.
So it's like so virtual co-working. And I'm just curious if you have a theory about why you think it's so effective for you. Why do you think it works?
It's a sense of accountability, because you know that the other person is working. They're not just physically, it's not just that they're physically there. And, you know, it's funny, I did a book years ago called The Man Who Lied to His Laptop. The author sadly passed away, named Cliff Nass at Stanford. He studied human-computer interaction. And the big insight of that book was that, you know, your brain doesn't really understand the difference between real and virtual. You know, Clippy in Microsoft Word is annoying because if a person acted that way, it would be annoying. Your brain doesn't have a way of mediating and saying that's a virtual character, that's a program. And it doesn't matter that this person is a stranger, that it's just an image on my screen. Like in my brain, somebody is sitting across from me and they're working and they expect me to be working. And that just flips a switch in my head. Even though I don't have a boss, I work for myself. It just flips a switch that I'm on the clock, I'm being watched, that person's doing their work, I need to be doing my work. And it all happens subconsciously.
And just logistically, if you're working on, if you have a laptop and you have your document open and you're working on it, where do you see the other person?
So it's just a tab on your browser. I know that sometimes people will, you know, make it small and put it in the corner. If they have enough real estate, it might be on a second monitor. I just go to another tab. I don't see them at all.
So you don't even see them.
That's right. I know they're there. I can check on them. Sometimes I'll look. Wow. Sometimes someone will step away and there's a chat. You can say, you know, be right back.
Right.
So you can always check, and you don't know whether they're watching you or not.
And but the camera's on you, so you
exactly
you, right. Okay.
Yeah. So they could be watching you at any moment. And again, my brain has no way of figuring out the difference between this totally virtual fake thing and the real reality of having someone sit across from me watching me.
Right.
And it works. All I can say is it works, and it's been working for months. And I've been so much more productive. I don't know how I would have operated with the workload that I have without this tool.
Whoa, I'm looking at something in the FAQ that says, if your partner goofs off during the session, you can report it using the recording button.
That's hilarious. I've never had that problem, actually. Every once in a while, someone will fail to show up for a session, but it's rare, and often they apologize. They say they had a health issue or whatever. Almost always people are there. Mm-hmm. They work to the end, and there's no goofing off. They might have to get up to do something, but they'll text you. You know, they'll say something.
And this is like pre-scheduled, so it's not like you could just sort of randomly show up and hope that someone's around. You kind of pre-schedule these?
It depends on the time of day, but generally it's pretty robust. If you go to the site right now and just pick a slot, 15 minutes from now, chances are it'll find a pairing for you for that session. So there's usually a good, it's a bubbling kind of network. That might change when they add paid accounts. I don't know, but I never have an issue.
Well, with the paid version, the pro version, do they match you up with other people who pay? Or
nope, it's just, as far as I know, it's just that they give you unlimited slots.
Up until now,
it's been free for as much as you want, but now I think you'll get like 10 a week, and if you want more.
Well, that's I have to kind of like digest it. That's it's kind of like almost like an illusion. You don't know why it works. It just works.
Exactly. And if you have solitary work that requires intense concentration, I have not found something that works as well as FocusMate. So I'm a big fan.
I'm just going to have to try it myself to see how it works. It's very intriguing.
Maybe we'll get paired. That would be fun. We can work together. I had that happen. On my newsletter, I mentioned it. And I was paired with someone, and like halfway through, he was like, or near the end, he was like, by the way, I know who you are. I read this on your newsletter. So I would imagine they have a few hundred users, but the odds of me running into someone are pretty small.
That is funny. Okay. So, in the same vein of like getting stuff done, tell us about, Sorted.
Sorted. So Sorted is an interesting one. I use Things. I'm on Mac. I'm on all iOS, everything. So Things is my to-do list. I just, it's the best balance of features and simplicity and design. And I keep all of my projects in there and that stuff. But the problem I ran into is I really want a checklist for my day. I like to be, you know, focused on my projects. I don't want to have to think about what happens next. And that includes all my habits, exercise, meditation. If I'm meeting with someone, all these different things, I want them in one place. And I have not found a tool before now that allowed me to put them all into one track. And so what Sorted does is it imports or synchronizes rather with your calendar. So my Google Calendar goes in there and you can choose which of your calendars go in there. And each event on it becomes basically a task. And then you can add more tasks that are actual tasks. And what the beauty of it is, you can actually sort them together. So Things will show you your calendar next to your tasks. Sorted will actually put it into one row. So I know the next thing I have is the Cool Tools podcast recording with Mark and Kevin. And then after that, it might say, I have to go and write this email. And you see what I'm saying? So all my tasks are right there in order and I can shift them around. So, common situation, if I had a phone call, I need to do something beforehand. So I'll put that task before, but oh, now it turns out I don't have time to do it. Well, I'll just move it to after that event. And so it's all in one place. It's all in one row and I can sort everything. And I just have to worry about whatever's next in my queue. And so basically it gives me a checklist for my entire day.
And the difference between this and a to-do list is that it would include things that are, I guess, you do on a regular basis as well?
Every day I have repeating tasks. So okay. 80% of the tasks on my Sorted list at any time are repeating and they do them every day. So for example, meditation is always there at a certain time on weekdays and then a different time on weekends. All those different regular things that I would have used. I used to use tools like Productive, which is an iOS app for tracking habits. But the fact is, I'm never thinking like, oh, what habits should I do right now? Let me check my habit app. It's just not part of my, I don't want to have to think to check my habit app, whether I have a habit to do, and then also have a to-do list to see if there's a to-do to do. I'd rather just have this tell me like the next thing to do is dinner. And the next thing to do after that is you are going to, you know, back up a hard drive. And so all of that is in one place. And again, it synchronizes. So when I have a shared calendar thing, I don't have to manually add it to my queue. I used to do this in Things manually. I would just add all my events and put them on the today list and just do it manually. This way, all my events are in there automatically at the time. So if it's an event, you know, at 8 o'clock, it's going to be right there as an event. And then right below it, I can have the task I wanted to do afterwards or something I needed to remember to do at the event. So I never have to think more than that one task ahead. What is the next thing on my Sorted queue? That's what I do. And when you're doing editorial work and writing, that's so important because you can't just do any task at any time. You know, I have to write in the morning and edit in the morning. That's my best time to work on my client projects. And so just having it on my list randomly kind of misses the point. I need to be told, sit down. This is the first thing you need to do is this. It's intensive. It requires cognitive effort. And then maybe in the afternoon, do this other thing that doesn't require as much concentration. And so Sorted allows me to make those decisions in advance and then just follow the plan.
Is there a desktop app or is it for iOS device?
There is. The drawback is that because I use Google Calendar, which synchronizes to the iPhone Apple calendar, and then Sorted looks at the iPhone Apple calendar. It doesn't look at Google. And so the problem is the desktop app and the iPhone app don't talk to each other. So if I check off an event on the phone, it doesn't get matched off on the desktop app. I know it's a beta, so I feel like they're going to get it fixed, but I decided to just keep it clean and not worry about sync. Sync is always a problem with these solutions. I've always had problems with sync with the best tools. So I've decided to just stick to this. It's trusted. I know it works on my phone. And then like I said, the actual nitty gritty tasks on a particular project, they're in Things. It's all there. This is really just about like, sit down and work on this project now, and then go to this meeting, and then pick up the groceries, and the specifics are elsewhere. But this way, I never have to worry about what to do next.
That looks like a great solution to kind of the way I do it manually, where I kind of look at my calendar and I use Workflowy, and then I kind of make a to-do list on a piece of paper. I've made like a little template that I print out, and then I just go into what I call robot mode, and I only look at that task in front of me and do it, check it off, and then move to the next one and try not to deviate as much as possible.
That's exactly it. And I did the same thing. I did it manually with various tools, and Workflowy is a great tool. And I remember, you know, ever since I read the Checklist Manifesto, I don't know if you guys know that book, Atul Gawande. I wish there was a fifth tool, but that's a magnificent book. But this idea that when you're doing stuff that's complicated and messy, no matter how smart you are, no matter how practiced you are, you're going to miss a step. You're going to forget something. And it takes up bandwidth in your head. And like you said, I want to go into robot mode so I can put my bandwidth into the writing and not into which thing should I work on next. And because Sorted allows you to just drag and drop things and move them around or insert something between two other things, I can very quickly adapt to changing circumstances. Like if I lose the morning because something comes up, you know, the plumber comes over, I can quickly reprioritize, move things around. Oh, this can go this afternoon, that can go to tomorrow. And that way I know it's all going to happen at the earliest possible time.
That kind of reminds me a little bit of you need a budget, like moving money around.
Oh, exactly. Roll with the punches. That's one of the big, you need a budget concepts. You've got to roll with the punches, and that sort of allows me to do it. So another tool.
Is this a bot app? Does it have a subscription? How does economics work?
I think I just paid for, I think there's a free app and then you can pay for like a few additional features, which I did for something reasonable, a few bucks, no subscription.
Okay, great.
That's cool. All right. So another one, and this one I'm extremely interested in. I think it's pronounced Simul.
Yes.
Simul.
Simul, like simultaneous, I assume. I've actually talked to them. They're new, so they asked me as like a new customer. They kind of talked to me about features and functionality. Cool. I've been looking for this my whole career. And now I'm not going to say I love Microsoft Word, but when you work in book publishing and with authors, there's issues.
There's no
I know
option.
People think Google Docs, but yeah, you got to work with Word. And one of the things is, you know, it's really about tracking changes and about knowing about the different versions. And, you know, when I first started in publishing, when I was working with you, Mark, the tradition was every version of the manuscript, the printout, would be stacked in a room. We called it dead matter, sort of an old publishing term. So when you had this, like the copy editor, the first typeset pages, whatever, I would take it like as an assistant, I would go into this room and each, you know, all these famous books from our imprint where I worked at the time, there'd be like this stack of eight manuscripts representing the different versions because they just needed to know for legal reasons. For example, if they needed to go back to a copy edit, how did this mistake get introduced? Is this plagiarism? Whatever, any kind of circumstance you can imagine. Mm-hmm. It's really important to know this was the version on the Saturday the 2nd, and these are the changes that were made. And Word's version control is disastrous. And also I'm emailing back and forth with people. So I have bought books in Word. I randomly will Google it. I will Google version control for Word. Just every few months, it'll occur to me like maybe someone's invented something. And believe it or not, about 6 months ago, I Googled version control for Word. It's a very strange thing to do, but that's how important it is. And Simul popped up and I was kind of almost blown away. I was like, is this for real? And I looked at it and it's a very basic site. And what it does is you upload a Word file. And that's version one, or you can number it whatever you like. And then you can open it live. So you can click on it and it will open a Word document in your local Word app, but it will be hosted on the server. And it doesn't use its own servers. That was a big part of the trust involved. It can use Google Drive, or I use the Microsoft functionality. So basically you log into your Microsoft account through it, and it is using Microsoft's own cloud storage. Mm-hmm. And so it will pull down that version, just kind of like if you work at a newspaper or magazine, they have that content management system. You're pulling down the version, you make the changes, and then that's the new version. When you close it, that's sealed, that's version two. And then if someone works on it, version three, version four. So it is designed to can work with multiple people. So if you're collaborating with people in your organization and you need to know that this was Jim's draft on it and then Jennifer edited it, so you'll have all of those things. You can label them with a comment, say, this was the one where we tried to remove chapter three. And it'll also show you the changes. So if you click on a version on the website, it'll show you only those pages that have been changed with a kind of a track changes. So you don't have to open Word. But I don't do any of that. I actually do it just for myself. So I will create the first version of a book proposal for a client. I'll upload it. That's version one. And then as I go, I will open it, make changes. And then when I give it to a client, all they receive is that your typical Word document. It doesn't look weird to them. Mm-hmm. And I can use track changes as usual. They can make their changes. And when I get it back, I upload it. SIML automatically puts it in as the next version and shows the changes from my version. So I can immediately see what they did. You can also create a branch if you're worried that the version they sent back has been sort of changed in such a serious way that you just don't want it part of the general flow. And that'll become a branch. So you can keep it separate. And in this way, I can roll back. I just sent in a completed book proposal to an agent, and it was 35 versions before it went out. And I can roll it back to any of them and immediately see what was done and or go back to an earlier version. So it just gives me such tremendous peace of mind.
And when but is the ordinary author track changes still on? Or is it also displaying those changes in an additional way?
You can do both. So you can leave track changes on or off. The file itself is a normal Word file. And if I send it to an author with the track changes on, they will see normal changes tracked. When you put it into SIML, it ignores track changes. It looks at what the actual current state of the document is, and it will compare that in its own website. So you can immediately see this was deleted, this was added.
And how does it show those things? Is it different colors? Or
yeah, same, basically visually identical to what track changes would look like, but you don't have to have track changes on. What it is doing, it is literally comparing line by line from the last version.
Cool. Now, is there a way that two people can look at the same Word document and work on it at the same time?
That's a good question. I think it's possible. You can, so when I click on it, I have it set by default to open in Microsoft Word on my laptop, which I don't love. PC version's better, but it's acceptable, so it'll open that up. But if you have the paid version, which I do, which I think is about $15 a month, you can also choose to open it in 365, their online Google Doc competitor. Mm-hmm. And presumably, if you do it, if you work in 365, you will be able to share it. In fact, I take it back. I take that back. So if you're working with the desktop app and your file is saved in Dropbox, I think you can use the desktop app to share, mm-hmm. but for this purpose, you would need to open the 365 version. And that's basically like Google Docs. And in theory, you could have anyone work with you at that time.
Okay.
But in publishing, you know, I've had some techie authors and they have this, you know, like the simultaneous, like they're coding or something at the same time. And I just do not, it just rubs me the wrong way. I don't believe in modifying a document with someone else at the same time. Mm-hmm. It's just not kosher. Mm-hmm. So I very much prefer having like, here's my take and then mm-hmm. here's your take. Mm-hmm. And I like that cadence. That's how I work. Yeah. But yeah, I think you could do it with 365.
Okay. I've never used Microsoft 365. Do you prefer it to the regular?
No, I much prefer the desktop app, but it's not a huge difference. Mm-hmm. It's not a huge difference. And they've been getting better. I'm super, because I use track changes and often for dramatic amounts of changes when you're editing an entire book, I've always been a little wary of how stable Word is around them. And I've had the issue of sending something to like the iPad version of Word and the track change is not quite working. And I know they're always improving it, but it's always a little iffy. I'd rather just keep it to the most recent version of desktop Word. And frankly, I'm thinking about installing Parallels to have the PC version because they never quite have it in total parity. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's still, everyone's a stepchild versus the main PC desktop Word, and track changes can be very finicky. I don't know. I had an author once when I was at St. Martin's Press, I edited her book and she called me. She was very angry. And she said, if you wanted to write my book, why didn't you write it? And what she had misinterpreted was I had moved text. And this was before they did the new thing where it's green when you move text. It wasn't smart enough. So it looked like I had basically deleted her whole manuscript and written it all fresh. But it was just that I'd like moved the chapters. I just copy and pasted. And once she understood, she obviously apologized for yelling at me. But this is the kind that when you get to that level, it takes a lot of program intelligence, which Word doesn't always have, to keep track of where everything went and what it looks like. So I'm very finicky. I use the most stable version I can.
I was doing a writing job with another author, and we were trying to do it so we could have like a Google Docs so that we could do it on the cloud and we could both be working if we wanted to at the same time, instead of having to pass on versions back and forth. But it turned out that we looked really hard, but there was no track changes for Google Docs. and that we could find. So we moved over to the Microsoft, I think it's called One. Maybe that's the same as 360. I'm not really sure.
OneDrive. Yeah, that's OneDrive. Yeah, you were doing 365. And there is, right, in Google Docs, it has a kind of track changes, but it's not up to the same level of functionality.
Yeah, I couldn't find really any way to do real change. But so we just moved to the Microsoft Cloud One 365, I guess that's what it's called, version, in order to do track changes. And even that is still not as you say, not as either intuitive or as easy as the desktop versions.
Yeah, it's still not there. I have a very particular way of working. I make all the changes invisible, but so that I don't get distracted by all the red. Right. I do a lot of change. As Mark will tell you, I do a lot of changes to the manuscripts and it would become unreadable. But I do keep the comments visible. So I have all these different settings that I have to like tune. But once here, the beauty of Word is, for all its flaws, I've been using it for a long, 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 long time. You know, since the mid 90s earlier, and I'm really fast with it once I'm in the flow. And so a tool like Simul allows me to relax. I don't have to keep track of, you know, changing the name. Like, what do I call this version? It just takes care of all that for me.
Oh, I'll have to check it out because for better or worse, you just said in the publishing industry, including magazines, Word docs are still kind of the standard. And even if I'm writing in Google Docs, I'll export it out into a Word doc.
Yeah, no, it's just I've come to accept it. I personally would much rather be writing in something like Scrivener or using Markdown, but this is the nature of the world we're in.
Okay, that's great. So let's see. Another one on your list is the Mac family tree.
Yes. Okay. So this was a weird one. So I've done 23andMe and Jenny. I don't know if that's pronounced that way, but
I don't know.
Jenny.com, okay. Ancestry.com. These are all, you know, and now they're all owned by each other. It gets very confusing, but there's a bunch of different, these genealogy sites where they track your lineage, but then they also use one database so they can tell you like, oh, this person over here appears to be related to you, and you can link your trees together and combine your information. So his great grandmother is your great grandmother, and he has some newspaper documents. So it's for people who want to, and that was all fascinating. But I have very limited information about my ancestry because of the war and, you know, travel between countries and those sorts of things. And I have some certain precious documents and facts, and I want them to be, you know, untouched. And these programs are very willy-nilly. They'll kind of like throw someone else's information into your database. And there was no sense of integrity for my family tree. So I'd find out some interesting stuff about a random, you know, 13th cousin, but my own family tree would suddenly have, you know, entries entirely in Hebrew, because that would like replace, you know, they there's no intelligence to the way it was mushing everything together. Mm-hmm. And I got frustrated with that. And also they're tremendously expensive with a subscription. And it's like, I just want to keep track of like my ancestry, like what I know about them, and pictures and information, what jobs they had. And I want it to stay put. I don't want to have to pay. And I also don't want to have to pay this fee year after year, because I don't see this as a hobby. I know a lot of people treat this as a hobby and just do it all the time. I just want to get it right and have it there. So if my kids ask me, you know, what did our great grandparents do? Oh, they had a chocolate factory in Poland. So I looked around. It seemed like the whole world of genealogy had been eaten by web-based, cloud-based subscription services. And then I found this app for Mac Family Tree. It's like $50. Which is like old school software prices. When you remember, you used to buy like a software in a box, but it's rock solid. It's actively developed. It works really, really well. It does have cloud backup, but it's your tree. No one is getting access to it. I don't have to worry about sensitive information. I just can put all the information. I imported all the information from Ancestry and whatever, and now it's in there. And it does have some tools for grabbing more stuff from the internet or other databases, but it's much more, they're not trying to sell me anything or upgrade me to anything. I'll tell you, I don't know if it was Ancestry. I think it was Ancestry. I literally went to their website and started to fill out the form and then didn't. And they called me within 5 minutes, like a salesman called me in 5 minutes to see what was going on. And then later I emailed them with a tech support question, never heard back, ever. And it's just, there's a rapacious nature of that world. It's very competitive. And these companies are owned by that company. It's just shadowy. I just want out of it. This is a local app. I paid for it. It's done. It's got the family tree in it. And I just recommend it very highly to anyone who wants to kind of have a database for family information.
So the idea would be that this is sort of, what's the word? Not frozen, but this is sort of the canonical version. And if you wanted to, if you did want to participate in some of the more cloud-based, you could use that to find new things. And when you decided that it was something you wanted to bring over, you would port it over into your private family tree, so to speak.
Exactly. It has very extensive tool set. It has everything I've thought to do. Like if I need to put in a newspaper clipping and I need to link it to the, you know, my grandparents both arrived at a particular port in, Charleston, you know, fleeing the war. And so I got the newspaper clipping. It has to be linked to each of them. And then as a couple. So every time I think of something where I want to store one aspect of someone's story, when they were born, died, their names, any sort of weird variety, all that stuff, the tools are in there. So if I wanted to expand the tool, the map, I could. There's lots of things with online tools and research. And I know that some people who use this app are hardcore genealogical, you know, hobbyists, and it's got everything for them. But for my simple person, right now, I'm still just trying to enter the database because I have hand scribbled, like literally from my grandmother before she died, hand drawn family trees that she kind of wrote down, I think knowing that no one really had kept track of it and there was no record. So she kind of scribbled like, this is this cousin, this is that cousin, and I'm trying to put it in and make sure it's all correct. And that's painstaking, but I like the fact that it's my database and I can just keep working on it until I've got it as correct as I can make it.
Yeah. And so this is a Mac base and there's likely to be a PC based or
I don't think so. Okay, it's possible, but I bet you there's an analog piece of software. I would just say if someone uses PC and has this issue where they're tired of these crazy annual subscriptions and they just want like an actual database for their genealogy, look for an equivalent app. I thought there wouldn't be, but there is for Mac and I'm sure there is one for PC and it's probably been around for 30 years, but old apps can be good. That's true.
Yeah. Well, we're talking about Word.
Yeah. There's a lot of great legacy stuff out there. BB Edit and Tinderbox and Devon Think.
That's actually
a lot of great
interesting
apps.
Question. I think Word may be the oldest app that I have on. Well, I have Text Wrangler, or I think, which was maybe old as Word.
And that's discontinued. They don't even work on that anymore.
That's great,
probably.
Yeah.
What do we use now? I don't even know. What's the oldest app you have on your computer? That's a good question.
The oldest app on my computer, well, if you count, if you're not looking at versions, but just in terms of what the oldest app is, it's got to be Word.
Yeah.
I can't imagine anything else would be older. Yeah, it's not even close. It's definitely Word. And I remember I was a WordPerfect. I loved WordPerfect. Remember it had those tags so you would enclose the words and you could see this is bold and had a start and an end tag. And when Word came along, it's so fussy with that stuff. To this day, bold and italic and Word don't work properly at all, which is so strange because it's been 20 years. But I remember thinking like, why are we switching to this? WordPerfect is clearly superior.
Yes. I remember those those days about people arguing about WordPerfect. So old apps can be good. And, I think my second oldest app is maybe Photoshop. I don't know. Photoshop's been around a long time.
It has been. So, Dave, tell us about your newsletter, which I subscribe and really like. It's incredibly useful, like a must read for anyone who's an author. Tell us about it, why you started it.
Oh, and I'm so delighted. I'm so delighted that you read it because with my list and my metrics, I really focus, or I'd like to think I focus on quality over quantity. So to have Mark Fraunfelder reading it means so much. It's delightful. I think we were talking about this. I had this early podcast. I had an early blog. I had a blog so early. I mean, not as early as you, but like flash mobs. I was like, my blog was like one of the places you would find out about flash mobs. I was like 2004. So early days. And then when I went into publishing, I had to quiet that down because editors lost their jobs over saying the wrong thing or posting sales figures. And so I kind of shut everything down, my podcast, all of it. And now that I'm freelance, I'm my own boss and I can do my own thing. And so I write this newsletter called The Maven Game, Maven being, you know, an expert. And so I'm a book collaborator. So I work with experts who are writing books. I do book proposals or I help them edit their manuscripts or I ghost, you know, what you would say, ghostwrite books. And there are certain issues that come up again and again, not just for experts who want help with their books, but just generally people who need to write books of nonfiction mostly, although I do feel like there's stuff in there for people who write fiction as well. And it's a lot of complaining. It's a lot of screeds. But I've lately, the last maybe 6 months or a year, I've been doing it for years now. But I think I've taken more of a positive spin, just trying to be encouraging, because I do have a small but loyal readership. And I can tell that it inspires people to get like a little boost on the weekend, because it beats you down. You know, one of the big things is that, you know, just like the social media and the need to be known and online and all this, and social, it just kills your creative capacity. Mm-hmm. And so I just want to encourage people to like, let go of all that stuff, let go of the social media rat race, and just make some good work, even if it's for, like I said, a small list of really cool people like Mark Fraunfelder. So it's a lot of fun, and people who are interested should subscribe.
Are you off of all social media?
I'm on LinkedIn. I don't even know why. I mean, I feel like I want to just see when people change jobs, you know, for people I've worked with over all those years. But I don't really check it. Sometimes I'll give someone
it's not off of everything else. Not on his sorted list. So he doesn't do social media.
I mean, it made me feel bad, you know, when I read Cal Newport's book, which I'm sure someone has mentioned as a tool, but Deep Work. Which, you know, I was so dismissive of it when I saw the cover. I was like, I've worked on 10 books like that. But when I read it, it was just one of those books that got to me. And I realized I had to do something. And I think after the election, I was like, that's it. It's gone. Mm-hmm. It's all gone. And I'm very pleased with that decision.
Yeah.
Well, it certainly will help your productivity for sure.
I'm remarkably productive. I shock other ghostwriters. But I'll tell you, you know, if people want to email me, I mean, like a bunch of people who read my newsletter just write back to me as though we're having a conversation, which I'm delighted by. So that's my social media, you know, just
correspondence, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. That's all I ever really wanted. You know, I just wanted to talk to people online. The stalking thing was fun when, you know, Friendster first appeared. It was like, oh, whatever happened to that person? Oh, what happened to that person? But that wears off after a while. Mm-hmm. And I got to the point where I was like, all the people in my feed, like they're people I don't even know if I'd say hello if I passed them on the street. And that was it.
Yeah.
Well, I think you gave us four really great tools that we didn't know anything about. And they're also very, very useful and productive. And I know that I'll have to try at least one of them. The SIMO is something that I will need when I'm writing my next book. So thank you for that.
Oh, I'm pleased. I'm pleased that it was good. I was really nervous about duplicating. I'm sure you guys see the same. Some of the same tools pop up again and again.
No.
It's all new.
All new.
Good.
And I have to try Focus Mate just to see what happens.
Yes, it is.
Please do. Hopefully we'll get matched and have a little work session like the old days. And write more books, guys. Both of you need to write more books.
Yeah.
Don't have to work with me.
Well,
but
I know fewer people read them. That is something we have to keep account. But they do have a gravity that few things else have. So thanks for the encouragement.
Of course. And thanks for having me on the podcast. I really appreciate it. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Thank you so much.